Welcome to Not Terrible.
I'm Jess Hooker.
And I'm Mary Graham. This is episode 4 of the Not Terrible podcast. Today we're talking with author Shannon Martin about her new book, The Ministry of Ordinary Places, Waking Up to God's Goodness Around You, which releases October 9th. Shannon has a unique story about giving up on her idea of the American dream to live in a community surrounded by brokenness and uncertainty. We'll discuss what it means to be a good neighbor, how Shannon is choosing to find beauty in the everyday, and how she's discovering what truly matters in life. Not Terrible, a field guide for the hopeless optimist. Hi, Shannon.
Hey.
Thanks for
How's it going?
We're good. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, Shannon, I know you from Instagram because Mary introduced me to you. I know that this is our first official introduction. So, tell me a little bit about your family's journey from the big city and with big city jobs and now small town living.
Yeah, you know, we've had a really interesting sort of roller coaster trajectory to our life. So Corey and I, my husband and I, both grew up in very small town life, like almost, you know, both from pretty rural communities. And that was really what we were after. That's kind of the life that we thought that we would be living. We did live in Washington, D.C., you know, in the midst of everything for just about a year. So we weren't there for a real long time. But, you know, it's interesting because when we were in D.C., and this is before we had kids and, you know, all of this, but we were very resolute that, you know, city living was definitely not for us. It's not how we were built. And so we did end up moving back to Indiana. My husband was working for a politician at the time. So we moved back to the district office here in Indiana. And then we did eventually end up buying a farmhouse that was out in the middle of nowhere on 6 acres, and that's where we really thought we were gonna settle in forever, or, you know, as close to forever as you can get when you're in your 30s.
Sure.
So for us, the big shift was moving from that kind of rural, really small town mentality to moving to what is, you know, very ordinary, kind of low income neighborhood in a nearby city.
So I found this really interesting because we've kind of had opposite journeys. Like I also grew up in a small town, but immediately left for the city and lived downtown and taught in the inner city for about 10 years. And then we just recently moved to the country. I think we burnt out. Like I went hardcore for a long time with a lot of challenging situations, and I didn't pace myself. And there came a point where I couldn't do it any longer. And you waited a little bit longer maybe in life and then jumped in, and you're probably a lot more wiser about how you're living now to do long-term in a situation that doesn't always feel completely comfortable.
Yeah, you know, I don't know about the wiser part at all. We feel like we were really unprepared in a lot of ways. You know, Corey and I are both introverted, and I think I just had some of these really idealistic ideas about what country living could look like. And, you know, this was in the heyday of Pioneer Woman and all of these things, and we're starting our family, and, you know, I had all of these visions of what life was going to look like. When we landed here in our neighborhood, I mean, we really, you know, it's a fairly quiet neighborhood, but it's a really diverse neighborhood. For us, I mean, even as quiet as it may be, it was a lot louder than cornfields, which is what we were used to. You know, we were used to having just soybeans and cornfields as our neighbors. And so it was, you know, we didn't feel necessarily ready to even just have people around us all the time. But it's interesting that you kind of bring that up, because we have a lot of conversations more and more around the ideas of, you know, just sustainability. Like, how do we sustain this life that we live? Because it can be in some ways pretty what some people could and have said is kind of chaotic. You know, we have a lot of people in and out of our home. We are with people a lot, and we are, quite honestly, we're with people who are really deeply struggling in a lot of ways. You know, my husband is the chaplain at the county jail, and so a lot of our closest friends and, you know, the people that we really spend our lives with, they're coming out of incarceration, they're fighting, you know, generational poverty, and they're fighting their way out of addiction. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's just a lot that goes into that. And so I think it is important to constantly be, you know, looking at ways to build up endurance for this life. And so we do, you know, we're kind of learning that as we go.
Yeah. So we're kind of talking today in connection to the book that you have coming out this week. And one of the things that I loved and also kind of made me a little anxious in the book was that when you say you're living in community, like your door is always open. Like I see some of the things that you post on social media where you are just always kind of on call in a way that a lot of people aren't. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that looks like for your family, or how you kind of made that decision?
Yeah. You know, when we moved to the neighborhood, and our faith really informed a lot of that decision, but we also struggled because we didn't have the why. And, you know, I think a lot of humans, you know, we just crave, we can do things and we can even do weird things as long as we kind of know why, or mm-hmm. if we know the reason, we know the point. And we didn't really have a great why other than, you know, we knew that we were coming here to learn to be neighbors, to learn to really love our neighbors. And it didn't take long for us to understand that, you know, if we wanted to love our neighbors, we had to know them. Mm-hmm. And then just by virtue of, you know, what I mentioned before, you know, there are people in our lives who, you know, they just need support in different ways and in areas that we weren't, you know, traditionally familiar with. I mean, our son came out of incarceration himself. He's 24 years old now, but just living with him and living through that with him, it was really eye-opening to see these are not needy people. These are just people who, you know, for a lot of different reasons, their lives are an uphill climb, and they, you know, they're mm-hmm. trying to fit in with a culture that isn't necessarily rooting for their success. So, you know, it looks interesting to come around them. And what we started to realize was, you know, we can't solve any of this. Yeah. We wish we could, but we can't. What we can do is just be with people. You know, we can spend time just with the people around us. We can love them as friends, and we can love them as family. I mean, I will say, you know, I know that it, and I try to really keep a balance on this, but our door isn't always open, you know, and I know that it probably mm-hmm. looks like it is, but we know that there have to be times that the door is not open. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more open than I ever imagined it could be, because I'm not, you know, I'm not an extroverted person. I value, you know, I work from home, and I love sitting in my house in the quiet, you know, minding my business all day. I love that. But for us, we definitely realized that it was important for our door to kind of stay easy on its hinges, you know, so it might not always be wide open, but we were going to have to come to a place where we could see what might look like as interruptions. You know, that I guess my mind has shifted from, rather than seeing things as an interruption, seeing this as my actual life. You know, this is my this is my job, and this is my love. But it takes practice. And so we've been here for 6 years now, and we're still learning what it looks like to live in that way.
So the book that is coming out soon is called The Ministry of Ordinary Places, Waking Up to God's Goodness Around You. And I think so many of us either think our lives have to be really important and in front of a lot of people, or they don't have significance. Mm-hmm. And you are like actively saying no to that. You're saying no, the small things are actually where we can see, you know, like ourselves and others better. Right. What does that feel like to try to raise kids and to be married and to live in a community in a world that says you're doing it wrong?
Yeah. it's an interesting interplay because part of my life is lived online and part mm-hmm. of my life is lived with, you know, sort of growing that platform or, you know, as yeah. an author, this is part of the job. But the thing that is the most meaningful to me at the end of every day is not, you know, necessarily who's following me on Instagram or, you know, those things are part of my job and I honestly love them. And I love the community that can be created online. I love getting to know people who, you know, the internet makes it easy for us to sort of search the globe and find our specific people who we can talk to about the things that matter to us. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I'm just more and more aware that, you know, and maybe I'm having a little bit of like a midlife crisis. I don't know. But I'm 42 and I'm more and more aware of, you know, the brevity of life. Mm-hmm. Not to go down too dark of a path here, yeah. but I mean, these are the people that are going to be in some form or another, my neighbors and my friends, they're the ones that are going to be with me to the end. They're the ones that, you know, I wrote about this in the book. When I threw my back out, mm-hmm. they were the ones that came to my rescue, you know, and that's just the life that I want. And I, you know, so with raising kids, I mean, it's so interesting to me because I am really aware my kids are still relatively young. You know, we've got our big kid, Robert, who's 24 and he's off on his own now, but our three other kiddos at home, the oldest is 13, the youngest is 9. And this is for the most part, all they know. Mm-hmm. And so they're very, you know, where Corey and I have had to adapt to this idea of having a pretty open door policy and really anybody is welcome in our home. And that was new to us to live in that way. For my kids, it's really all they know. And I've seen them, you know, even though two of my little kids are introverts, one is an extrovert, but all three of them, I see how it's just kind of like breathing to them now. You know, they don't have this view of our nuclear family as being the end all be all. They see a lot of flexibility in that. And like you said, that's not something that's a real popular perspective to take culturally, mm-hmm. but you know, on holidays, there are always extras here, always on Christmas Day, there are extra people here and my kids just, you know, I don't think they even give it a second thought at this point. And so it is interesting as a mom to kind of watch that unfolding and to know I'm always super aware that they might grow up and just think we got it all wrong. You know, they might go live in a cabin in the mountains somewhere and just want to be alone all the time. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to watch what happens.
Jess and I talk about that sometimes where I think as adult children, I think no matter what our parents would have done, there would have been something wrong with it. Just like,
yeah,
that's, I'm just accepting it now that I'm already doing things wrong.
Right.
My kids will be upset about it later.
Yeah. I mean, we're doing the best that we can and we're doing the thing that seems right. And I know my parents were doing the same thing. And you know, I lived a very safe and contained, lifestyle. I had a wonderful childhood on our little, you know, acreage in the country, and everybody surrounding me really looked and lived and believed like I did. And it's just all I knew. And that was the life that they felt, you know, was the right life. And now, you know, we've made some different choices now, but that's the thing. We're all just kind of winging it.
Yeah.
and hoping that, you know, a lot of this just kind of comes out in the wash.
Oh, that's perfect. Actually.
Can I go off script for just a second?
Yeah,
this made me wonder about, and I don't want to dwell on the negative, but it just makes me curious in terms of just sometimes even the negative feedback that Mary and I get for sharing our experiences on the line. What has been like the most common resistance from the public, even people who you thought would hold you up in these moments? What's been something counter of what you're doing? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, my first reaction is, where do I start?
That's, oh my gosh.
I don't want to dwell too long on here. I can say I wrote a good bit about this in my first book, Falling Free. I kind of talked more about this because the reality is we got a whole lot of pushback on a lot of different things. And, you know, a lot of it was really rooted in a lot of care and concern and love for our family.
Right.
But it was really challenging for, you know, for the families that we were raised in who value just a very quiet, simple, you know, Christian life, who value living, you know, out in the country and living in particular communities. And, you know, this is something that Corey and I, though we didn't grow up in the same place, the communities we grew up in and the families we grew up in were very similar. So it was really difficult for some people to understand, you know, almost like we were being unfair to our children to take that from them.
Right.
And to, you know, to then plant us in a community that's just, you know, we laugh at this. Corey and I laugh at this. We're supremely embarrassed to say that we were kind of scared to move to where we live now.
Because, sure.
And now we're here and we're like, what in the world was our problem? But anything unfamiliar can seem scary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, from where we came from, you know, people were saying, like, there are, there's drugs there's gangs there, you know, there are liberals there. And lo and behold, they were exactly right. And those things are not, you know, that this isn't a matter of like, who is our community? We are obsessed with our community. We love it. We've learned and grown so much from it, but it was just blindingly unfamiliar in a lot of ways when we got here. And so, you know, that's been a tremendous source of growth for us. But the other thing that was tough for people, and this is a whole other conversation that we don't have time for today, but when we adopted our oldest son, Robert, you know, at the time he was 19 years old, he is African American. He was in jail and then was sent to prison. When he was released from prison, he was released to our care with his cigarette behind his ear and his ankle monitor on. And that was, I mean, at that point, we got pushback from strangers. You know, we had people on the internet telling us we were putting our family at deep risk. And that was a really challenging thing for us to navigate, because, you know, that's where it's like, oh, okay, well-meaning person on the internet who doesn't know anything about us. Like,
right.
You know, you don't think that, like, can you give us just a little bit of credit here? But it really opened our eyes to just a lot of the prejudice that does exist and a lot of the stereotypes and, you know, all of, I mean, it really woke us up to a lot of things that we just really needed to be awake to. So yeah, it's been a, you know, we pulled our kids out of one of the, well, Calvin was the only one in school, but one of the best rated school districts in the state to a failing Title I public school. I mean, on and on it went, you know, and then you work in the jail and then, you know, life just gets weirder and weirder. So there was a lot of opportunity for people to kind of call our wisdom into question.
Okay, I think that brings us to our next question. We live in such a divisive climate right now, and it seems that we only want to surround ourselves with like-minded people. In Chapter 3, you share a story of two unlikely friends. Will you share just a little bit of that story with us right now?
So, yes, that was a... She is one of... She's just a dear friend of mine now. But I'll retell the story a little bit because it's pretty funny, and it's very typical to kind of what we were in for when we moved here. So we were brand new in the neighborhood. Keep in mind, so Corey had worked, you know, he had worked for a United States congressman, a very, very conservative congressman. He actually worked for two, but both of them were very conservative politically. And that's just kind of the world that we came from. And so now we're in Goshen, you know, he's not working in politics at this point, but, you know, we hadn't evolved too much from where we had been. And, you know, one day a woman rolls up to our house on a bike and she looks very like, very, I don't know how you would say, like, I just remember my first impression of her was like, wow, she's so healthy, like, you know, rosy cheeks and she's on her bike. And, you know, I was so interested and I was in that place of like, I just want to get to know everybody and this is awesome. And so I had a brief conversation with her, and Corey kind of stuck his nose out the door at one point and said something and then kind of came back inside. But it was very clear to me, like, oh, Corey knows this woman. I've never seen her in my entire life, but he knows her. And so, you know, when we wrap up the conversation, I come inside like, what was that? Like, what was that weird tension that passed through the air? And he said to me, and she would not mind me saying this pretty bluntly. He said to me, like, oh, I know her, and she is the actual worst. And I'm like, what? Uh-oh. Like, I just met her, and she was lovely. So long story short, I mean, they had crossed paths in Corey's political world. And, you know, she has at the beliefs that Corey once held pretty tightly to, she had the complete opposite views. And so they're both strong personalities with really strong opinions, and they had dramatically butted heads. You know, unaware of all of this. But the interesting thing is that now, for one thing, we have slid away from those things that we had once held so tightly to. And we found opportunities to sit with her and to sit with a broad range of other people who brought something kind of new into our awareness. You know, they might express their faith differently. They might have different political opinions. I mean, they might be from different cultures. They might speak different first languages, on and on it goes. But we started just sitting down with her regularly and getting to know her as a person and talking to her and learning from her and really, more than anything, listening to her. And her and her husband are just dear friends of ours now. And so it's so funny to see what could really happen if instead of, you know, going to this divisive place where, you know, you're on one side and I'm on the other side and we're going to fight until, you know, there's never a good outcome to that. I mean, nobody changes their mind from situations like that. Right. But when you sit down and talk to somebody as a person, listen to them, it's amazing how much wider the world view grows, how much you start to see all of the things that we really do have in common. And we just, you know, we think they're fantastic now. And this is something that we can all kind of laugh about now.
Hey guys, we're going to take a quick break and talk to you about the sponsor of today's show, The Front Room Studio, something near and dear to both Mary and I. The Front Room Studio is located 20 minutes east of Indianapolis in New Palestine, Indiana, and it's open to hosting your next event or gathering. Comfortably accommodating groups of 15 or less, The Front Room Studio is the perfect space for your next wine and canvas night, book club, shower, or holiday party. Perhaps you're in need of a professional space to host a meeting or workshop. Our cozy conference table seats 10. Our modern vintage decor and natural light lends a unique backdrop to photographers needing space for the day. Visit the Front Room Studio on Facebook to schedule your next event in our affordable, stylish space. And now back to our interview with author Shannon Martin.
I love that. One of the things in your book that really stuck out to me was we hold so tightly to some of our beliefs, and then when we start to actually get to know people as opposed to just like the head knowledge,
yeah,
things start to change and we loosen our, you know, our hands on so many things. One of the things that kind of moved me a lot in the book was when you wrote in Nachos by the Hour, when you and I learned a lot. So I used to teach in an inner city school, and like I was a fresh faced 20 something white girl from a privileged neighborhood coming in to teach predominantly African American, like low income people, in a way that if I could go back 15 years, I would just apologize to every single person that I came in contact with. Like I was, I was a know-it-all in the worst way. So what, through that experience now I can see, like, I learned more through that than probably anything like I taught any student, you know, especially my first couple of years. In Nachos by the Hour, you tell the story of two girls coming to your house and seeing your fridge and just realizing, I think when we live in community with people that are different than us, we see ourselves in maybe a clearer way. Can you kind of tell us a little bit about that story, about those two girls coming to your house and how that shifted some things for you?
Yeah. And I'll start by saying, you know, when Robert, our oldest, moved in with us, you know, at that point he would have been maybe 20 years old, and just, you know, there's no good way to articulate what it's like to have, I mean, he had twin boys of his own, you know, he had twin infant boys who also stayed here on weekends with us. And it was a crazy time in this house, but you can't highlight enough the fact that, like, we had missed most of his life, and most of his life up to that point was just dramatically foreign to us in so many ways. And that's, you know, parenting him through that time and just finding our way as a family and all of those things, like, over and over and over again, I would find myself frustrated or, you know, mad or feeling entitled to something, mm-hmm. whatever the case may be. And almost every time, like, I just felt that mirror flip to myself, like, whatever it was that was, you know, irritating me about this new situation that was really challenging in a lot of ways and really beautiful and meaningful too. It was hard. You know, at each one of those barriers, I did feel that mirror flip. And, like, you know, you notice those things in yourself and you notice the ways you're being unfair. And, you know, I really resonate with that. Yeah, the two neighbor girls that came by, I mean, I will never forget that day. And it was, you know, I write all about it in the book. But basically, you know, they're two little, at the time they were in elementary school, and just two little chatterbox girls that, you know, that came around. And I had something on the stove, I think. So we started our conversation in the driveway, but then I was like, I got to get in there. And I think, if I'm being honest, part of me was kind of hoping that that would kind of wrap up the conversation and they would head off to the park or whatever. But instead they followed me inside. And so then it's like, okay, well, I guess this is what we're doing. And, you know, I continued on with making my soup or whatever. But at one point, just very mindlessly, I opened the fridge to grab something and they just lost their business. They could not believe the amount of food in my fridge. And so it became a whole, and, you know, they were at the time, I think, like fourth, and I think they were both in fourth grade. I mean, they were young kids. They weren't, you know, they didn't have a lot of filter happening. They were just saying what was in their mind. And what was in their mind was basically like, I mean, one of them even said, like, I've only seen this much food at a restaurant. Mm. And I just remember feeling so, like, you know, like a stab in the heart of, like, mm-hmm. what, you know, we have a lot of these moments, like, what are we doing? You know, we have proximity with a lot of people who have been through or are going through poverty, and the tension is just so real. And I think that's one of the things that kind of scares people away from, you know, kind of living in proximity with people who live differently, is that we just don't want that tension. It's easier mm-hmm. when we're surrounded with people who live the way we do. We don't have to think about our choices as hard. When you've got two fourth graders like gasping over the amount of food in your fridge, like, it caused me to question some things about my life.
Right.
And in particular, you know, why is this still not enough for me? You know, why am I still constantly thinking I need more and wanting nicer things? And, you know, on and on it goes. And that's where, I mean, that tension is just ever present in my life. And I think it really serves me well, but it's really uncomfortable. Yeah. I would rather live without that tension. I would rather not constantly be faced with, you know, my own privilege and, mm-hmm. You know, my excess and my wastefulness and my complaining, you know, my feeling that it isn't enough. And I think where I've come down on that is, you know, maybe a good place to start is to just try to continually find a place of contentment with what I have. Because the reality is I do have more than a lot of my neighbors, and there's just nothing that can really be done about that. You know, it's not about just, you know, getting rid of everything I have to kind of level the playing field. I know some people choose to live life that way, and I don't think that's a bad thing. But I think if I could just start with being content with what I have, mm-hmm. rather than, you know, looking at people who have more than I do, I think that's a pretty healthy place to start with that.
Yeah, that's interesting. There's been an ongoing conversation in our household for years in terms of, my son would like to go to a more diverse school, and he's visited some schools, and he just, he's not comfortable with the very conservative, virtually all white community that we live in. Mm-hmm. So we have to ask ourselves the question, would we rather be the change within our community, or would we rather go somewhere like would we rather be the change in a community where we're the minority in terms of our political stance, in terms of basically everything, to be honest, or would we rather move closer into the city or into a community where we know we're going to be among people who think like us?
Yeah.
What, like, that's been a, that just reminds me of that and making the decision. And my son Max has said, he's always like, I still want to go check out other schools, but until then I'm going to be that voice. I'll be the voice, and I'll raise the question, and I'll say, hey, just because your dad and your grandpa and your great grandpa all thought that way doesn't mean you have to do that too.
Yeah.
And challenging these high school kids to think differently or know that they at least have the option.
That's a powerful place to be. And that's where, like, I think the great thing about kind of living connected with the people around us is that, number one, it does cost us, no matter who we are and where we live and the communities we're living interconnected and living in real community with the people around us, it's going to cost us things. It's going to be uncomfortable in some ways, but the beautiful thing is it's something that we can all do, and it's going to look different from person to person. You know, your story is a perfect example of that. There's another friend of mine who, we laugh all the time over the similarities of our story. They're very similar, except they're exactly opposite. You know, she did the same thing where her and her family, around the time we moved into neighborhood life in the city, she was moving out of that into the country. And we both ended up kind of like, you know, you settle in and both of us were like, okay, now what?
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
And is it really, could it possibly be enough that now we're just here to live?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we don't need a thing. We don't need to be, like, doing a thing. We can just live and get to know our neighbors and believe that that is enough and believe that it's meaningful, believe that we, you know, there are ways that we can grow and, you know, lead our neighbors and learn from our neighbors. That's just something that no matter where you're at, it's within reach.
Shannon, have you read Bob Goff's new book, Everybody Always?
I haven't yet.
You haven't? I feel like that your book and his book would be a beautiful, like, companion. Series. Mm-hmm. Yes, companion in terms of like, love thy neighbor. Like, love everybody always. Like, you don't have to do life. You don't, like you just said, you don't have to have a thing. Just love people unconditionally. All people. Even the people you hate or the people that are opposite than you, love. I think those would be, those two, you guys need to team up. Maybe do a little book tour or something.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, interestingly enough, Bob came to the jail.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
His first book, Love Does, was like, I mean, it profoundly impacted me. And right away, you know, being the bossy Enneagram 8 that I am, I told my husband, I'm like, you have to read this book in the jail with your guys. It would be perfect.
Yeah.
And see, that it's fascinating to me because, so Corey started reading it and he loved it. And it was like, you know, Bob is I don't think he would make any bones about this. I mean, he's a white guy with privilege.
Right. Absolutely. You
would think that his story would not cross over to the inmates in the jail, but they loved it. And so he ended up coming and meeting them. And it's been, so I think they are reading his next book, and I know Corey's read it, and I just need to get my hands on it.
Yeah, that would be awesome. You will really enjoy it.
That's, Jess and I have talked about that too, because he puts his phone number in the back of the book.
Does. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, trust me, some of Corey's friends have used that phone number.
Yeah.
That's so crazy to me.
I know.
And Mary's like, do you think we should call him?
I mean, as an introvert, I would never actually call him, but Jess's like, I think I might call him.
I think I might call him. Yeah. I just want to see if he's going to answer the phone.
We have been with Bob a couple of times, like, with him, and his phone rings. We've witnessed those conversations happening.
Oh, my God.
That's wild.
He takes the calls. It's unbelievable. And it's not usually a long conversation. But, I mean, he's the real deal with that. It's pretty amazing.
That's crazy. So what would you – this is going to be my last question. I know I sent Shannon.
I know, and that's my fault. Well, I get wrapped up in the conversation, ask questions that I didn't approve with Mary. Shannon, I'm so sorry.
That was not what I was going to say. I got so excited that I typed up more questions than we would ever be able to answer.
I know, this is a lot. Were you overwhelmed when you got this pre-show sheet?
That's what Mary asked me. I was not overwhelmed. I thought it was great.
Good.
I didn't send the other 7 pages, so you're welcome. So what would you say to people who feel pushed to leave, they're safe, or they're kind of feeling that little something inside them that's saying, like, I don't think this is where I'm supposed to be anymore, but everything around them tells them that that's not correct. Like, what would you say to those people that maybe want to leave the status quo a little bit, but also super scary?
Yeah, because I just thought about that. I was like, man, this is a big jump. Like, give me like a little starter.
Baby step.
Like, what can I do? What's a little starter thing I could do?
Well, I mean, as far as like a starter, I could answer this several different ways. But I think wherever you are right now, like for people who are, you know, everybody's in their place, wherever it is, they've been there different amounts of time, whatever. I am such a huge believer that the best place to start to engage where you are is to just pay attention. Mm. And so I wrote a good bit about that in my next book, and it almost sounds like too basic.
Right.
And I get that. But what I know is that just physically, like I'm talking in the most practical way possible, you know, take walks in your place, spend time in your front yard, you know, get to know. I mean, I feel like our neighbor is whoever regularly intersects our life or, you know, crosses paths with us.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a particular checkout person at the grocery store, like go through her lane every time, get to know her. I mean, this is the long game and it's a slow game, but paying attention to our place and, you know, even physically kind of memorizing our place is such a wonderful way to build up a love for our community. And as we love our place, we love the people in our place. And, you know, it's powerful.
Right.
And it's almost like magical. I think it's like, how does this work? But it does.
Mm-hmm.
And then for people who are just right on that edge, you know, where my family was, you know, a handful of years ago where we were living on the farm and, you know, we had no idea the world that was waiting for us outside of, you know, at the other end of our driveway or drive lane. But the people that are just feeling that nudge to in some way, I mean, you know, I don't think living with intention means that we need to move or quit our job or adopt a child or, you know, all these different things. I think for a lot of us, it might mean one or more of those things. But whatever the feeling is, whatever you feel yourself kind of being drawn to, I am just the biggest cheerleader. When you said leaving status quo behind, that is like, that should be my, that should be my banner. I think we have to look for ways. So whether we, you know, maybe we live out in the country forever and that's just our home. How can we leave the status quo of our life behind in some small way? How can we build relationships with people who are going to challenge us, you know, to take a harder look at our life and our beliefs in some way that are going to kind of pop the bubble that we're under and introduce us to just different ways of living? I mean, you know, as much pushback as we got in some of those areas, like I'm just the girl now standing on the side of the road with, you know, holding up a sign with face paint and like screaming my head off cheering for anybody that is just willing to do that weird thing that nobody else understands.
Right.
I think a lot of times like the crazy thing is, you know, the thing that just doesn't make sense. That's kind of where the adventure and the magic can be, because it's kind of, I just remember Corey and I feeling like we would not have chosen this on our own. You know, we didn't dream this up on our own. This is never the life that we would have thought, like, you know, here's what we should do. We're perfectly suited for this. And I think it was kind of that weird factor that helped us understand, you know, this is something bigger than us. And so we're just going to keep walking in that direction. So, yeah, I'm like the cheerleader for all of the weird things.
Yeah.
So whoever you are, whatever change you're looking at, just picture me on the sidelines screaming my brains out for you.
Oh my gosh. Everything. All I, what I heard you say is so that I can like, I need like a one or two sentence, you know? And it just, it sounds like you're like, make yourself available to the people around you in your community. And
show up.
Yeah. Just show up. Cause it's so easy to sit behind our phones and scroll and find people we like that like us and that like the same thing. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just
the most meaningful moment is when you find yourself loved by that person in your regular life. And it, you know, I'm a big believer in just kind of looking around, like who's near you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Make them your people.
Yeah.
And they might annoy you in some ways. You probably annoy them in some ways, but this is like what family, this is what makes family.
Right. Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the good stuff. I also would say, like, I love what you said, like just be available, show up 100%.
Yeah.
And I would add to that, show up as the needy one.
Ooh.
You be the one to ask for help.
Okay.
You be the one to borrow the stick of butter.
Right.
And, you know, you're really not borrowing it. You're just taking their butter.
Right.
But anytime I, you know, we found that, we kind of stumbled into that as just a really kind of powerful way to build trust with the people around us, to not be, you know, to not position ourselves as the ones here to help,
right?
You know, but to be the ones that are like, we need stuff from you.
Yeah, empowering people who aren't often able to help others.
Yeah,
and giving them
to help others.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yes. Yeah. Wow, that's a place to start. I like that.
Can you tell us where, so our listeners, where they can find you, how they can connect with you. Where are you on the internet?
Yep. So, the Ministry of Ordinary Places. It releases October 9th, and you can find that book really anywhere books are sold. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Shannon Writes, and it's Shannan, because my parents did that thing. and then I'm really active on Instagram and Twitter. I love them both. I'm also on Facebook at Shannon Martin Writes, and my blog is shannonmartinwrites.com.
Cool. And I would highly recommend following Shannon on Instagram. Like she's sharing some powerful stories and telling some good stuff there.
Thanks.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for joining us.
Yeah. Thank you guys. I loved it.
Thanks, Shannon.
Yep. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Not Terrible with Jess Hooker and Mary Graham. Our guest today was Shannon Martin, and she was discussing her new book, The Ministry of Ordinary Places, available now where all books are sold. Visit us at notterriblepodcast.com for show notes and additional content. You can sign up for our newsletter for bonus episodes and podcast extras. Connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter at Not Terrible Podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast provider.
When you subscribe, leave us a review. We'd love to share it on the podcast, like this one from JKlein6510. Somehow every week, Jess and Mary talk about something that directly relates to what I'm working through in my own life. I love hearing their thoughts as well as useful tools for life. Remembering other people have these struggles and triumphs is so powerful. Thank you for what you're doing, ladies.
Not Terrible is recorded in conjunction with The Chick McGee Show and the Off the Air podcast. Recorded in the Front Room Studios, this has been a Waco production.